KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. New York Times religion columnist Mark Oppenheimer has written a short ebook biography of sex columnist and activist Dan Savage. It's called Dan Savage, the First Gay Celebrity. You can find everything you want to know about Mark Oppenheimer at markoppenheimer.com. He's joining us today from Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. Thanks for taking the time, Mark.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ross.
So how did a religion columnist come to write a biography of Dan Savage, sex columnist?
Well, I guess the first thing you'd say is that not all religion columnists are so religious themselves. But, you know, Dan's an interesting figure to me for a lot of reasons. I first wrote about him in a cover story for the New York Times Magazine that was really about his views on monogamy and infidelity. And he has some pretty interesting and thoughtful and excitable views about that. So I came at Dan Savage from the point of view of a moral question, which is the kind of thing I write about a lot. But having reported on him and interviewed him at length, I realized there was a lot more to say and that he was a pretty interesting figure in his own right. And interestingly, I seem to always write about Catholics. Some of them are lapsed Catholics. Some are Orthodox, right-wing Catholics. But, you know, Dan's a Chicago Catholic son of an Irish cop. So, you know, it's not so far from my beat as you might imagine.
Yeah, and I want to get to his background. But when I told people about this interview, I said your book was called The First Gay Celebrity, Dan Savage, The First Gay Celebrity. And they said, well, what about Liberace? What about Ellen DeGeneres? Why do you call Dan the first gay celebrity?
Right. I have fabulous answers to those questions. So as far as I can tell, he is the first really pretty famous guy, like national name recognition level, who is gay and has been openly gay for his entire rise to celebrity. So it's interesting that people come back to me with Liberace. Liberace never said he was gay. I mean, he was closeted his entire career. Ellen DeGeneres was closeted for her entire rise to stardom. I mean, she came out very, very late in the arc of her stardom. Not true of Dan Savage. And I think that makes him a really interesting transitional figure.
What's important to know about Dan Savage's upbringing? You mentioned son of a cop, Catholic. What formed him in his early years?
Dan Savage was from a very, very close-knit and piled on top of each other family of four Irish Catholic children in working or middle-class Chicago. He's ethnic Irish Catholic. And so a lot of people, if they know his work well, they know that he's very, very pro-family. He himself, you know, considers himself married, has a long-term husband, adopted a son. And there are people on the queer left who have long attacked Savage as being very bourgeois, much too oriented toward the family, toward traditional family structures. I think that's understandable if you understand that he comes from an ethnic and religious background that is all about the immediate nuclear family.
Dan achieved his first acclaim by writing the Savage Love sex column for The Stranger beginning in 1991. It went on to be published in many other papers as it is today. How did he get that job?
It's a funny story. The guys who were – or the man and woman who were coming out to Seattle to start The Stranger had been involved with the startup of The Onion, the satirical newspaper in Madison, Wisconsin. And then they were down in the Chicago area, and they had sold The Onion, and they were trying to figure out what to do next. So they decided that Seattle needed an alternative to the alternative newspaper, to Seattle Weekly. So they were coming out here to start this newspaper. They're just moving out here as carpetbaggers to start an alt weekly. And Dan said to them, well, listen, you know, when you do it, you need a sex column. So can I write the sex column? At the time, he was a clerk at a video store. And they said, well, sure, you know, this funny kid who works behind the counter at the video store, why not let him write a sex column?
So
it was supposed to be a gay kid writes about sex for straight people. The whole thing was supposed to be a joke.
Right. Well, it starts out back in 1991, and because they've got no letters to begin, they have staff members sending in their letters, and they all begin with, hey, faggot. But you're right, Savage Love is never really about gayness or aimed at fellow gays.
Right. It was from the beginning, it was going to be this faggot who was giving somewhat tongue-in-cheek but also ultimately serious sex advice to straight people. And the joke was that straight people were constantly telling gay people how to lead their lives and how to be better citizens, better Americans. Here was a gay guy who was going to turn the tables and tell straight people how to lead their lives. But it very quickly transitioned from that because after the first column, they started getting letters from readers, and his fellow staffers never had to jimmy up letters again. So it became – there was just a crush of questions. You have to remember this is also before the internet. So, you know, a frank sex column was a pretty original thing given what was passing for sex advice at the time.
Yes, and you write how he kind of fit into what was passing for sex advice at the time in a very particular way, in a new way.
Right. You had – so this is a really interesting part of the story is that if you look back to the early and mid-90s, there were – the world of sex advice was dominated by two women. One was Dr. Ruth, who is still going strong, still, you know, out there teaching, lecturing, but no longer is on Letterman as much as she was back in the day when she was a real TV and radio star. And then the other one was a woman named Ask Isadora. Isadora Allman wrote a column called Ask Isadora, and she was out of the Bay Area in San Francisco and Oakland. And they were both fine. I mean, they gave perfectly good clinical advice about which part to insert where, but neither one of them was – they didn't deal with gay people much. They didn't deal with kinks. They didn't deal with fetishes. They didn't deal with the underside of sex. And so there was this whole territory that Savage was able to step into and exploit that just wasn't being handled by Dr. Ruth and Isadora.
Mark Oppenheimer is my guest. He's written a short biography, an ebook of Dan Savage. It's called Dan Savage, the First Gay Celebrity. You can find more about it at his website, markoppenheimer.com, two P's. You write that you believe that one of Savage's most notable qualities is the compassion he feels for straight men. What do you mean by that?
Well, he's interesting on the topic of straight men. You know, his line about it is, yeah, straight men rule the world, but that also means that they have to rule the Taco Bell. And you know, I think what he means by that is that there's a lot of pressure that comes with being the dominant majority, with being the guy who has to hold all the power. It's very hard for straight men to admit vulnerabilities. It's hard for them to ask for help, to seek therapy. It's hard for them to admit any kind of sexual interest or orientation that doesn't that isn't 100% heterosexual. So, you know, women saying that they once in college hooked up with another woman, that doesn't make them a lesbian for life. And gay men who say that they once had sex with a woman, it doesn't make them straight. But God forbid a heterosexual man says that once upon a time he fooled around with another man when he was drunk or curious or whatever, and he's afraid that he's going to be tarred for life as a homo. So it's a very, very precarious position to be in psychologically.
Dan also writes, as you recount it, that gay men are naturally not monogamous.
Well, so he's working from a lot of – I mean, there's a lot of research there. Judith Stacey at NYU is one of the sociologists who's done that work. There's a body of research that says that that gay male couples are less likely to be exclusively monogamous than straight couples or than lesbian couples. But, you know, one of the things he's arguing is that, in fact, human beings, gay or straight, did not evolve to be monogamous. And he goes farther and says that, you know, until very recently, until 30 or 40 years ago, nobody expected them to be. That if you go back to the night, really through the 1950s and 60s and going hundreds or thousands of years before then, it was assumed, Dan says, that straight men, married men would, you know, would have affairs or would have a mistress or would have something on the side. And he sees it as one of the problematic fallouts of women's liberation, that everyone agreed that everybody had to be utterly monogamous all the time, that had to be, as he puts it, fairsy. And he thinks that ended up being bad for men and women alike.
You can't talk about Savage Love without alluding to the way he gives his sex advice. He's funny. He's full of surprises. He's highly educational. Often he'll turn to experts, and highly profane. You note that Savage, with a clean vocabulary, is a bit like sex with three condoms. How important is his way of expression to getting his message across?
I think less so over time. I think when he was first starting out, I mean, when that first column ran and it was addressed, "Hey, faggot," which, by the way, you know, was as much a jab at politically correct – at the politically correct gay community as it was anything else. At the beginning, you know, he was talking about things that in and of themselves were seen as profane. You weren't supposed to talk about fetishes or about kinky lifestyles or about swinging or about all these things. I mean, Dr. Ruth didn't go near that stuff. So to get people to listen up and to have an audience, you had to make the column really, really punchy. You had to make it really grab the audience. And so I think that profanity was a way of, you know, getting an audience, but also saying, look, we're liberated here. We don't abide by those rules. The truth is now, though, that his column, it doesn't need that. I think he has the kind of audience and also the kind of respect from his audience that and he's become a better writer. I mean, if you read his columns today versus his columns 20 years ago, he doesn't need the profanity because he really has developed a very witty and elegant writer's voice that stands on its own.
I'm speaking with Mark Oppenheimer. He has written a short ebook biography of Dan Savage, the sex columnist, playwright, TV host for a short-lived MTV series, author, activist, co-creator of the influential YouTube channel It Gets Better, offering solace to gay youth and much, much more. He's still an emerging cultural figure, and this book begins to grapple at what that's all about. And we also have to mention gonzo political prankster. He had the famous contest for a definition of Santorum when conservative Senator Rick Santorum was lashing out against gay people. And the winning definition, a frothy mixture of lube and fecal matter, is now often, is a byproduct of anal sex, is now often showing up as the first, second, third, or fourth result when you go on to Google and look up Santorum's name. But that's not the only thing. I mean, he has had a number of political, kind of funny political activist things that he's also done. The licking of the doorknob is something that we recall from here. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, it was when Gary Bauer was running for president. So Gary Bauer of the Family Research Council. So this would have been, I don't know if it was 1996 or 2000. I forget when. But and Savage decided he was going to go out to Iowa and report on, he ended up volunteering for Bauer's campaign, and then he had a terrible flu. And so then after all the campaign workers had gone home for the night, he went around and started licking the doorknobs and sneezing on everything, trying to infect Gary Bauer's entire staff with the flu. He wrote this up for Salon.com, the website, which I've written for, and you know, I'm a huge admirer of Salon. And under an earlier editorial leadership, Salon ended up kind of disavowing the piece. I mean, they ran – after they came under a lot of fire, they ran – it wasn't a retraction, but it was more of an apology saying, you know, this is not how we think that our correspondents should go around doing their political journalism. But, you know, I was dismayed to read that they hadn't just run with it and sold it 100%. But yeah, that was the kind – Savage – the other big one was when he became a delegate to the Kings County Republican convention,
right,
and tried to get a gay rights plank into the Republican state platform, which he did not succeed.
That did not work.
That did not work.
It was very entertaining to read about, though. You write of Dan, except for the fact that he's married to a man and their son is adopted, Savage has the most traditional home life of anyone in his family of origin, which is kind of interesting.
Right. I'm not – so it's not all staying with me in my mind exactly. You have to go buy the book. But his brother Billy, who's a English professor at Northwestern University, is unmarried, has a long-term female partner, and they have an open marriage. They see other people. And then he has another brother and another sister, neither one of whom has had a sort of fully traditional path to, you know, marriage and child rearing. I think one of them was divorced and remarried or cohabitated for a long time before committing. I forget the exact details, but
yeah.
if you were the good Irish Catholic mom saying which of my kids is in the most traditional family arrangement, it would be Dan and Terry.
You also say that he is one of the few men as boringly earnest on the pleasures of parenting as you are.
Yes, I think he even beats me. I mean, the two of us talking about our kids is just really, really tedious. I mean, my daughters are so adorable. Let me show you pictures. Oh no, my son is great. Let me show you pictures. And it's really, a subversive figure. He's not when it comes to his love for his son.
There's a great quote you have from Andrew Sullivan, one of the people you talked to for this book, where he calls Dan Savage a strange combination. He's personally a very conservative person. In fact, Sullivan says, I think he's very Catholic culturally. Do you agree?
I do. I mean, one wants to be careful talking about anyone's religion as a culture. I mean, Dan, I think, is an atheist. He's not in love with the traditional church by any means. He's not a church goer, unlike, say, Andrew Sullivan and you know, other gay – there's some very religious gay Catholics, right? Dan's not one of those. But, you know, I do think that he – in how he looks at family, in how he looks at community, in his skeptical attitude toward change and revolution. He's fundamentally a moderate, and he's fundamentally someone who I think is bound to notions of continuity and tradition rather than radical breaks and revolution. And I think that his support for same-sex marriage, he's always talked about it in very kind of traditionalist terms. And in fact, again, he has many gay critics who think that gay marriage stuff is just selling out to a straight paradigm. And he's been fighting those critics for 25 years now.
He has shown an ability. I mean, he's got a tremendous intellect and an ability to look at issues in a particular way and argue for them. But he also has a heck of a lot of media savvy. I mean, the launching the It Gets Better YouTube channel offering solace to gay youth. I don't know if he and his husband Terry realized what was going to happen, but that took off immediately. President Obama has put a video up there just personally talking to young gay youth who might feel isolated about how things will improve in their lives. That seems to be part of his ability, too.
I think he does have a lot of media savvy. I also think that it's an authentic media savvy rather than a cultivated one. He's naturally performative. He was a theater major at the University of Illinois, and he's, as you know, he still directs plays. I think he's probably a frustrated director. I think that probably if he had another life to lead, it would be as a Broadway director. But I think he's just someone who naturally connects well with audiences. And I think that he has managed to make that come through in his writing voice and in the radio show that he used to have in Seattle, in the MTV show he's had recently, and in his ideas for, let's face it, publicity stunts. I mean, Santorum, It Gets Better. These are genius viral web and video publicity stunts. And that's just a sensibility that, you can't buy marketing that good. Some people just, some people are just Don Drapers that way.
What surprised you about Dan Savage when you started to look into his life, Mark?
I think what surprised me was how smart he was. and I say that only because, if you're going back 5 years, I knew him in two ways. One was as the author of Savage Love, the advice column, which was great and which was witty, but is not meant to be intellectual. And the other way that I knew him was from his occasional radio essays on This American Life, which are very moving and very literate. But then when I got to know him and when I got to read more deeply, I realized this is someone who actually can really hold his own in a debate with philosophers, in a debate with historians. I think he reads a tremendous amount. I think he assimilates a lot of knowledge in an ambient way. I think he picks up on things very, very quickly. So I hosted a YouTube debate between him and Brian Brown, who's the head of the National Organization for Marriage, on the subject of gay marriage. And depending on where your sympathies lie, that probably determined who you thought was the victor. But from a debaterly point of view, it was a draw. And Brian Brown this is a guy who almost finished a doctorate in history. So, Dan can hang with anyone intelligence-wise.
I'm glad you mentioned that debate because I got a chance to watch it, and I highly recommend it, particularly here in Washington State, where we have a same-sex marriage on the ballot. It's one of the most informative and also entertaining ways of learning about this and hearing the different perspectives, and it's wonderful hearing Dan Savage go head-to-head with this person. We're just about out of time, but are there things about Dan Savage that still puzzle you, Mark?
I wouldn't say – no, I've completely figured him out. I mean, I'm a terrific journalist, and there's nothing I don't understand at this point. But, I do say in my ebook and that I get to the end. I say, look, I included an afterword where I said, this ebook's, if anything, a little too positive. I mean, I like the guy, and I probably suspended critical judgment too much. He has his critics, some from a feminist point of view, some from a fat people's rights point of view, which you can go read more about. So, I think there are areas that I haven't explored deeply enough or critically enough.
We'll have to leave it there. Mark, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mark Oppenheimer, New York Times religion columnist, and his new short biography, an ebook about Dan Savage called Dan Savage, the First Gay Celebrity. Find out all about it at markoppenheimer.com. That's OPPENHEIMER.com. This is KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm Ross Reynolds.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.